sort of countries or different countries though they may be, but very much in terms of how God and faith are viewed. And there are some convergences, but there are many divergences. So I would say that Christians in this country actually need to learn to work in cross-cultural situations, because that is what they live in. But they don't always see like that. It's about like the crab and the fish. You know, the crab talks to the fish and says, "Oh, it's lovely in the water," and the fish says, "But what's water?" You know, you don't know, you can't see what you're living within because you're so close to it. And so therefore what we need is the outsider, the stranger, to come and say to us, actually, and this of course happens all the while, actually these are the areas where you're not quite seeing things in the same way as we do. And perhaps we can, our views, our perspective, can help you to see things and see the Christian gospel and Christian mission in a different way in this country. So I think that is a very broad answer to your second or third question.
May I have three, I really brief questions. The first one is that you mentioned that you did your research among UK and Ireland churches.
Yeah.
So I would be wondering if there were any differences between both contexts, Ireland
yeah,
and
indeed.
UK.
Yeah.
The second
yeah.
one is why did you choose a specific case study of Nottinghamshire?
Yep.
Why Nottinghamshire?
Yes.
And then
very good question.
The third one, you already touched upon that as well, but I would be wondering if about differences between evangelicals, ecumenicals,
yeah.
etc.
Yeah.
I would be wondering what role do confessions, creeds, and catechism and stuff like that play in missions, if any.
Yeah.
The first one, on the Irish perspective,
yeah.
of course, yes, it is very, very different. But in terms of mission theology, actually, there was a great degree of convergence. And the Irish part of the sample included Church of Ireland, Roman Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic mission agencies, who were also the religious communities, Mill Hill missionaries, those sorts of things as well for here, as well for in Ireland. And I mean, there weren't, I need to go back to the material and do some particular work on it before I gave an absolutely definitive answer, but certainly in broad terms, there weren't enormous differences. Ireland, of course, at the time was going through the great boom, and that might be slightly different now. In terms of Nottinghamshire, well, at a BIOMS conference, I think it was here, 3-4 years ago, I met this guy called Nigel Rooms and talked to him about the research we were doing. And he said, and I said to him, we need a local context as well as a national context to both compare, to contrast, to speak to each other. And he said, I can do that for you. So that's the reason why we had Nottinghamshire, so purely pragmatics. And your third question was about confessions, and some of the mission council leaders who and denominational leaders who replied to the survey and then were picked up in interview certainly did mention the confessions, but said that whilst they were foundational, they weren't necessarily foundational for mission. So they were looking at very different things now, which was largely about looking to the ecumenical sort of mission debate, which has been around the World Council of Churches and other places, that has mutated into the denominations. So it looks different, but actually those roots can be sort of traced back, things like partnership and Missio Dei and others. But so they were foundational, but not for mission. And certainly it was those things that were having a more immediate impact. And you know, I mean, there are other churches, the Church of England will be one, which has a funny sort of relationship, today's church, to its foundational documents. But that's slightly different.
Two more quotes, Richard.
The rejection of separating language.
Yes.
I tease that out a bit. There's the traditional sort of, which you mentioned, might be evangelical, but goodness knows it isn't particularly.
No.
Separating language is about, you know, sin and sins, personal sin and all that sort of thing. What does that, on that side of it, does that affect also the evangelical agencies? Because one might expect them to hold more to it. And the other sort of possible separating language would be certain forms of liberation theology.
Indeed.
Does this mean that liberation theology is going to be held pretty in a pretty sort of fuzzy sort of way because, you know, the sharp-edged sort of confrontational side of it is going to be rejected? And that's one double question. The other one, I suppose, is to pick up the comment on praxis. You know, you talked about being contextual. Is that because we are praxis-minded in that technical form of it, that we don't sort of start, well, I still do, but most people no longer start from a sort of theoretical position, but from models of theological reflection and of you know, of a practice sort of starting where you are and then examining it.
I think that's absolutely right about the praxis, and I think all of us came away with from doing this, which has only been confirmed, is that when you talk about mission, it's contextual, it's embedded, it's about experience, it's about local context, all of those sorts of things, much, much more than it is about theory. I love the big theories, and would love to start with them, but, I mean, your parish experience is very diverse and very deep, and, you know, a lot of your parishioners don't start there at all, do they? I think it is practice where we start from, and we extrapolate from those of us who are engaged in the particular task of doing that. The separating language, one of the fascinating things is that whilst the evangelical sample, and of course where that the roots of that came from the website searches, which had a predominantly evangelical flavour because of the large 30, in fact, out of the 46, 30 of them were from Global Connections. And so you didn't get this enormous sort of emphasis on, you know, confronting with sin and hell and that sort of thing. That level of language and use of language is very much, it is. And it's because it's about communication in a context with a culture that's looking for meaning. And also, it's about needing to raise money. That was another factor that we looked at. So no, I mean, all of that softer language was very, very evident in the evangelical sample. With the addition of the eschatological stuff, of course, which was fascinating.
And on the other side, where would it come anyway? There isn't a sort of liberate. There isn't nobody exposing a sort of quite sharp liberation theology that is
exactly.
Is saying, you know,
exactly.
I'm the capitalist or
exactly. Exactly.
Mm,
that's right. And it's interesting because with questions like, for instance, you know, the yardstick of mission is concern for the poorest. You had a very, very high level across all the sample of agree, but you had 53 people in the neither agree nor disagree response category.
Mm.
Now that's quite hard in terms of the justice stuff. The yardstick of mission, yardstick, is concern for the poorest. And certainly the relationship between mission and development, as I've mentioned with the justice, was very, very sharp indeed. And whilst you'll get an agree on mission and development are inseparable, when you ask a question like mission, development, basically, I mean, this is a phraseology, I might be able to find it here, but basically saying, you know, development is mission without development is not mission, then, you know, again, you've got that sort of quite stark or otherwise a grouping in the middle. Now, the problem with the survey, and I think if I were doing this again, and this is about one of the weaknesses of the research, I'm not sure that I would do the survey again, though many of those who used it said that it was an extremely good and useful tool for their teams to explore their own understandings of mission. I'm not sure I'd do it again. I think what I might do, particularly with the size of the sample, which was small, I think what I might do is actually just say, right, you get a staff person doing group interviews and see what the data was like coming from that. Because the group interviews would allow for the presence of story and experience, which the survey didn't, and which we have found is so axiomatic to the way we do mission.
Time for a couple more comments. Just one from the back.
Janice, coming from a country on the other side of the world,
yes,
mission agencies have become further away from the churches themselves.
Right.
I'm wondering what it is like in this country in an island, how closely aligned or what their relationship is.
Mm. Well, there are any number of people in this room who are much better at answering this than me. But, I mean, my job at the moment is to, for the Church of England alone, is to come up with, negotiate a strategy for the future of understanding mission for the Church of England, and that's with the companion links with the church and also with the mission agencies. And I would say that certainly with recent discussions, which bear all of this research out in terms of proclamation and Missio Dei and everything like that, USPG very much Missio Dei, CMS very much proclamation. However, there's a real desire to stay close to the church through a group called, a structure called Partnership for World Mission. And I think that 5 years ago, something like that, there was a movement away from that. But at the moment, you know, there is a desire, real desire, to stay part of the Church of England. Because a lot of that is about identity. I can't talk for other denominations, and perhaps Des can speak for Presbyterian Strait URC. But no, I think there is to have a close link, though not wanting to be, but also to maintain an identity that allows for that pioneering role, so that CMS can become a mission agency, so that USPG can be looking at its future, and of course, these are only the ones that USPG, CMS. Crosslinks and others work ecumenically. So all of them work ecumenically. But there's a desire, even I think amongst those who are perhaps more tangential in Partnership for World Mission, to actually stay part of that particular grouping at the moment.
Final comment? You had your hand up earlier, Des.
Well, I was just aware that maybe one or two people who haven't spoken.
I think the floor's yours. Thank you for your consideration.
Well, it's really just a comment, an observation, with your research showing that strong accent to the word mission, whereas from a two-thirds global south perspective, we're problematizing the word mission because of its militaristic overtones and because of its close association with the colonial project.
Absolutely.
And that it's still, you know, it's not problematized in this context. So
that's right. That's fascinating. Yes, absolutely fascinating. That's very valuable. Thank you. And I think looking at the Anglican churches, because that's what I'm working in Australia, New Zealand, there has been a problematizing of the word mission because of the colonial legacy in Canada too. And that's been enormous. Here, we've never really, I would venture to suggest, had that searing questioning of our own identity and use of language like that. And I do wonder whether in the Anglican context that's going to happen for the Church of England, and certainly the role of the Church of England, whether that's going to happen with the current debates in the Anglican Communion. It is certainly happened to a certain degree, but it isn't anything like you've experienced.
I'm going to make a comment about that, because I think every part of the Anglican Communion has its own history. And where there's been a small number of expatriate missionaries, and most of the missionaries have in fact been indigenous, the word doesn't have necessarily that connotation.
No.
And it's interesting that in a number of Anglican provinces, they've set up their own boards of mission. And kept that word.
That's true, very true.
So, I mean, it does seem to me it depends on the context very often and the history there. And linked with colonialism.
That's right.
Which is not necessarily the same in each part of the world.
No,
far from.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
We seem all right with the word mission. We did have a ticky-ticky for the word missionary. So, you know, the word missionary was dropped by CMS for mission partner. And of course, within this context, everyone has mission statements now. The word has become embedded in quite different ways, related but different ways, within the general context. So if you had a general go at the word mission, you might find all sorts of, you know, the general context saying, but we all have mission statements, we all do that.
That's right. The one place where they've rejected the term mission statement is, of course, is Christian Aid.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about absolutely secular things.
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, absolutely, yeah, that's right.
District councils and companies.
And that's right, and they do.
Well, we may continue our discussion informally, but let me bring this formal part to a close and bring in some tea, I hope, which is waiting behind the door. But thank you very much, Janice, not only for giving us a fascinating presentation, but for answering our questions and comments so well. And thank you to you all for joining us. Thank you.